anxiety, fear, anger, depression, because those are mental health issues. Automatically they think schizophrenia and stuff, you know, the heavy duty ones. But the ones we go through consistently. So what I feel is missing is a model that we can all adapt or adopt on how to address. And Denise mentioned this about emotional competency. One of my success stories, and I could probably count my real success stories in one hand, working with families. But I decided when I was working for this agency that I'm only going to work in the homes, not in the office. I don't want families coming into the office. I'm going to go to them. And my boss looked at me at the time. She says, really? I says, yes. I said, I got a car, you know, and the community is spread out all over. So you just let them know that I'm coming. So they set up my first session. And at that time, I decided that I'm not going to go in and talk about the husband's chronic alcoholism, the daughter's not going to school, or having boyfriends, or not doing the dishes, or any of those common things that people want to send their kids away for counseling, or their husband, or their wife. I said, when I go in, we're going to sit around the table and have a cup of tea. And I'm going to give you these little file cards. It became one of my tools. And I work with any group, I carry file cards. And I said, the first thing you're going to write is three things I want to change about myself on one side of the card. Then on the other side, you're going to talk about three things I'd like to see change in this family. So I'd give them 10 minutes to write that. We're sipping tea and they're writing. Husband says, I can't write very good. I draw pictures. Put symbols in there. It doesn't matter. Just put something on there. You know, because he is a residential school survivor. You know, he was addicted. He was abused. Everybody who went to residential school suffered some kind of abuse. So we'd done that, and then I gave them each a binder, and I'd go back and print it out on my computer, and they'd each have what they shared. Then I'd go in, and we'd talk just about one emotion at a time, and this is an emotional competency. And the question I'd ask is, what happens to me, or what is anger to me? So they write that. Other side of the card. What happens when I see someone angry? Then in another card, what happens to me when I'm angry? Then they would share what they wrote on their cards as a family. So they had an understanding of what anger and what happens to people when they see anger. I started to watch this emotional competency unfold, and they became where they can talk now about being angry and being upset. Because the last part on the last card was, what am I going to do now when I'm angry? You know, so the I statements are important for us, because I think Denise or one of you mentioned, you know, about being isolated. That's when we become I people. When we become I people, we're prone to depression, anger, and fear. Because it's a group thing. Somebody will help you figure it out. Auntie, uncle, whoever, right? Yeah. So that was, I think that's what's missing, is a model And I know you were working as a model. And I know there's probably a lot of models that don't work. But it's all in their approach. After my first year as an addictions counselor, 1976, 77 rolls around, and I told the chief, I'm quitting. He says, why? I said, I've been working one whole year and I don't have one client. Nobody wants to quit drinking. I mean, and he looks at me and he says, change your methods. Give it another year, Jerry, change your methods. I said, oh, okay. Because I figured I wasn't earning my money, you know, because I got moral standards, work standards. So I said, okay. So I started taking people out berry picking. We took out the men cutting wood. I started a boxing club. I started coaching track and field with the kids, children. And I took people to the fishing grounds. And it was there that I didn't even have to talk as a counselor. We're sitting around a campfire having tea. And all of a sudden, this man starts talking about his problems. I didn't even have to ask him. The environment, I think, is so critical. Because there's a stigma about offices. It was social workers that caused a lot of harm in the 60s scoop, and even today. RCMP, doctors, teachers, professionals have created this stigma for our people. Yet there's something wrong with us. Nothing wrong with us. It's what happened to us. So we find a way where we can get them to say hello to their problems. Then they can say goodbye to them. So I have one more question. And it's, if Jerry gave you, Sahilthit gave you $1 million to do work with families, what would you do? Just a few statements, or go as long as you want, whatever. This is just, this is where we use our imagination, and all of a sudden it might just explode. $1 million, oh my God, this is what I do. So we'll start with Marla this time. This is about the solution.
Oh, how to contain myself with that question. I'm just going to speak about what matters to me right now. I think that what feels most natural for me, and that's if I had my magic wand where I could bring Denise into all of my communities here at home and join her and hers, that we could spend time with the elders and the caregivers in the communities to share the insight that they are in fact the answer, and that who we are as people is beautiful. Our rituals are beautiful. Our culture is beautiful. And that we can take care of each other in that model. That's why I was so drawn to work with Denise, is because she, she's written this program called Gathering Our Medicine. And we certainly honor deeply one of our biggest mentors, Dr. Gordon Neufeld, who was the first person that I heard speak about relationship as being the answer for kids who are struggling. And when I entered into relationship, instead of working as a professional, it transformed all the relationships in my life and with the families that I was trying to take care of and assist and help. And, you know, that's where my yearnings continue to be. And so I am thinking so much about the money aspect. I hadn't thought of it in that way, but I guess it would just mean accessibility to me, that this kind of insight becomes accessible to everybody. This kind of healing becomes accessible to everybody.
Okay, that's a good one. That's what we're all about here. Denise.
Yeah, in my wildest dreams, what would I do with $1 million? Well, wow. I mean, part of, and I think, Jerry, I just want to quickly go back and say you hit the nail on the head about the relational approach. And there is a ton of research on this, and I'm undertaking my PhD now looking at this, about how we can't do anything outside of relationship, really. And so that the relationship is the first and foremost thing, and that it doesn't really matter what modality you use. You can go berry picking can be your modality, your methodology. And the moment that someone trusts you, they feel safe with you, and they fall into a spontaneous relationship with you, it becomes therapeutic. And so you don't have to have a degree in psychology to be a healer. This is the piece. And so if I had that kind of money at my disposal, boy, I would carry on what we're trying to do, which is build capacity in community so that we can pass these teachings on and become facilitators of community members looking to their own place-based rituals and ways to provide healing to their own people, that our people start to look to each other as the answer and realize, wow, you know what, our tragedies do not have to continue to become our traumas. We are resilient. We are built to overcome adversity in togetherness, and that we have all of this these beautiful ways of knowing and being right there at our fingertips, and we have each other. And that, you know, I would continue to spread that message and build capacity and support this work in community, because there's only one of me and one of Marla, right? And it's not our work to do it all for everybody. It's not. And that's really the model that we are attempting to continue to develop and impart, and shift that colonial mindset around mental health and healing, that there are other ways that will work better for our people.
Yes. You know, Indigenous is about empowering your neighbors, your family, you know, and I've had fantasies about $1 million, what I would do. <You know? laughs> I had this fantasy in 1995. I'm going to find the way that everybody can use and will heal. And my description in my mind was this: there's this thread that you pull on a rice sack. We used to buy rice and flour and cloth sacks. And if you pull the right thread, it just goes, you can open the bag. If you pull the wrong one, you have to cut it with a knife or a scissor. I said, I want a program that you can pull it and just go, and everybody takes part. Everybody wants it. You know? But I know that you two both said the answer. I was in Labrador, like I was telling you. There's two very important messages there for me. It's a man-made problem. And the other one was the elders of that community told the man that hired me, we want to talk to that man. he came to me and he said, the elders want to talk to you. And they put up a big teepee overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, away from the community. So I go on there with these elders. I have two interpreters. Because that's all they speak is Eno. So they're asking me about BC, about the people over there. So I told them, you know, we had really high alcoholism, drug abuse, violence, destruction of property, suicide. And I said, people are losing their language and their ceremony in lots of the communities. So I told them, they asked me questions, and I told them what we're doing, you know, and they had asked about food, they asked about all kinds of questions. I think they've seen the impact of junk food on us as people. Because they get a barge there on an island, and they'd have a barge almost a pop. So a lot of people are addicted to pop, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, you know, lots of sugar in it and stuff. Anyway, they asked me questions, and then they were talking amongst themselves, and then the interpreter says to me, they want to know if you have a question. And of course I did. These are elders. The last ones to come off the land, last ones to live on a reservation in Labrador. It's fluent speakers. Chased the caribou herds when they were young. So I said to them, why are we this way, right across Canada? And they talked amongst themselves. And interpreter says to me after a while, he says, they know the answer. I says, oh. So he says to me, they said we're like this because we're breaking our own laws, indigenous laws. And they said they even have an example. They said the caribou herds were our lifeline. They kept us alive. We'd follow the herds in Labrador. Just like the way buffalo used to be in the plains. Used to be 65 million buffalo from Alberta to Manitoba. That's lots of buffalo, right? It is the same with the caribou herds. And he says we had such a respect for the caribou that the long bones on the leg, we'd grind it up to use in ceremony. And if we didn't use them all, we'd bundle them up and hang them in the spruce trees to let the caribou know we respect them, we honor them. He says, now you go down, you can see caribou legs laying on the ground. They said, as soon as we start to break one of our laws, it's easy to break the others. So that makes total sense to me. So part of it is for us to revive our laws. And these are relationship laws. I remember the first time I make a hand drum. This is not the one, this was gifted to me. My teacher, Aaron, I made the drum. I had to overdo it a couple of times, make mistakes because I was insecure. No, I make the drum and I'm looking at it. Oh, it's beautiful. So perfect. How could I do that? I could because he's a wonderful teacher. And I'm looking and he comes over and he sees me looking and I'm smiling. And he says, you know, you have to give it away, don't you? I says in my mind, no. But I gave it away, and the teaching is you don't give it to a family member. you give it to somebody else in another family because it's about forming relationships, creating bonds with other people. That's being indigenous. Indigenous is healing yourself when something goes wrong. Actively look for the healing. Someone asked, I was listening to these people talking about parenting. Is there a parenting program? And the answer was, the parents to be good parents must always heal themselves. There's no magical step process in parenting. Because once you heal yourself, because when we're hurting or we're cut, you know, between human beings, we're walking around either with fear, anger, or sadness in our eyes because of conflicts between families, in the family too. So if you're carrying that, of course your children are going to see it and pick it up. So to be a good parent, heal yourself. And your children will see in your eyes that you're okay. It's a tough job, parenting. I know it is. I've raised two sets of kids, you know, but I see I reaped lots of rewards after I healed. So I'd just like to thank you for sharing with me today. You know, it's a good way to be on the winter solstice with you. Because we're going to the light. Because the earth shifted on its axis. And the days are going to get longer again. And we want to show some light to the families. And there could be a father, a mother, a child, a sibling listening to this podcast. And the hope is that they achieve some understanding. Something will fall in place for them and say, oh, maybe I should go see my uncle or my auntie. We come from beautiful people. All indigenous people are beautiful people. And yes, we've made mistakes. But we can heal. Healing for the family is a good message. And that's what this podcast is about. That's what the goal was. And I have really wonderful feelings, and I'm just so grateful that you joined me. And I'm grateful for the work that you do. You know, compassionate people are the ones that are willing participants with those people that are suffering. And I know I'm sitting with two compassionate life givers today. In my view, a lot of the majority of the healing after we crashed and burned from colonization was picked up by the life givers. Many of the life givers kept the language, kept the ceremonies going, as well as grandpas too. And there's a lot of grandpas that taught me. But I just like today was to acknowledge the life givers. I'd never be here if it wasn't for my mom. So I think all of us guys need to understand that. So we're going to be closing off here. So I'd like to close off by you choosing, because a family, our grandchildren, children, parents, siblings, uncles, aunts, cousins, if you're going to pick a group today, Or you can just say families in general. What would your message be going into the light? So you can pick a grandpa or grandparents or parents or children. Just whatever comes up in those wonderful minds of yours. So this is a chance for you to give a message to a specific group you want to. Or you can just say families in general. Let's start with Denise.
That's such a wonderful question. And I'm going to say families in general and all adults in caring for our kids. The best thing you can do for a child is let them see your delight in them and let them see that twinkle, that sparkle in your eye. Let that shine for them and let them see that that is the best medicine for a child's soul. And it's something that we all are capable of. We all have access to this.
Thank you, Denise. That's a good one. Okay, Marla.
I also want to speak to any adults, any families who are caring for the young, whether that's in your own family or in the context of a school or in any context where you take care of kids. There's incredible hope. It's to know that relationship is the answer, that our own, if for the adults who are struggling with their healing, becoming the answer for a child is healing in and of itself, so that you don't have to be fully healed to take care of your young. Showing up, taking care of, delighting in them, as Denise just so beautifully said, and not letting anything get in the way of staying connected, staying in togetherness. That even when our big feelings arise and things can get messy in the family, that that's okay, that we can take the lead and take the responsibility of keeping our kids connected to us no matter what.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to give a message to, I guess, all the dads and grandpas. You know, to not give up. You know, to reach out. Reach out for help. But also to share, like Denise was saying, get a twinkle in your eye. Connect with somebody. Help them to laugh. Help them to weep. Help them to be themselves by being yourself. You know, you're being your authentic self. Yes, we're going to make mistakes in the future. We've made mistakes in the past, but we can get over it. We truly can. Sometimes it requires making a lot of amendments, doing the work of taking responsibility for your actions. I'd just like to thank, you know, my teachers. One of them, Elder, he says, be careful and sincere with your words. And he used a term, it can be like a bullet leaving the end of a gun. Another elder said to me, don't you ever play with that word love. If you're going to say you love somebody, you mean it. You don't play with it. You be careful. So I've had wonderful teachers. I call them campfire teachers, or, you know, they're around the fire or around the kitchen table. I just like to honor all the ones out there now that are helping. People like yourself. We're going to revive the laws of our people and share it with the world. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on to Teachings in the Air, because we release Teachings in the Air. You know, and, yeah, so thank you.